Hello, and welcome to the Organizational Mindfulness Podcast, where in every episode, we interview leading authors and thought leaders in the fields of mindfulness, neuroscience, and organizational change. You'll hear the latest insights, discoveries, and guidance from world-class experts as we explore recent trends, new ideas, and important work related to the adoption of mindfulness in organizations. This podcast is presented by the Institute for Organizational Mindfulness. In this very first edition of the Organizational Mindfulness Podcast, I'm going to be talking with Michael Foster, the founder of the Institute for Organizational Mindfulness, about what we're up to here and how we get started and our vision for this podcast, which is really amazing and fun, and we're having a great time. So Michael, welcome to the podcast, which we are both co-creating.
Yeah, thank you, Brett. I really appreciate that. And I just want to thank you for raising your hand and becoming the master of ceremonies and the host for this new series. We really appreciate it. You know, you're an accomplished guy.
Thank you.
And we really, really are looking forward to your conversations with, you know, all the great folks that we've lined up. So thank you very much. We appreciate that. You know, I'm not sure if you actually asked me the question.
Well,
Brett,
let me ask the question. What are you doing with the Institute for Organizational Mindfulness? It's like, you know, when I encountered you, I was on the web and I'm looking at LinkedIn and I'm going, look at this. These guys are like IOM. They're like this Aetna and Ford. I was looking at the webcast and I saw, oh, they've got these communities in various cities and stuff. And I said, I need to find out what these guys are up to. And I actually reached out to IOM and said, hey, let's get an organization starting in Seattle. And we started talking about that. And then this thing segued into a podcast. And you said, you know, I'd really like to do a podcast. And that's how we got started with that. But, you know, I didn't at that time, I don't think, fully appreciate kind of the vision and scope of what you're up to here. So fill us in a little bit on how IOM got started and your vision.
Okay, so the thumbnail is that the Institute for Organizational Mindfulness is a relatively new nonprofit association. We have about 4,200, 4,300 members today. Most of those members are human capital and operating leaders inside of business organizations. We have a number of members that are coming from healthcare, a number that are actually coming from education, universities, et cetera, and are essentially academics, and a number that are coming from the government, military branches and government agencies. So what we all share is a determination to bring science-based, performance-focused mindfulness into our organizations. We share the knowledge, if you will, of the new science that has emerged over the past two decades, and that very clearly offers a real framework for completely secular interpretations of mindfulness concepts and mindfulness practices. And so, you know, mindfulness is at this place in its evolution, if you will, modern mindfulness, if you will, where it's been in the public realm now for several decades, and everyone sort of has a sense that mindfulness is a good thing, that mindfulness helps, that mindfulness is applicable to, for example, stress reduction, that it's a good mental exercise set to sort of add on to your daily regimen of you know, personal development. But what's really not known yet is the extent to which two things. One is that what mindfulness can actually do to help develop mental and emotional skills that go beyond just stress relief. They go beyond, you know, sort of simply even health and well-being, and really go to strengthening and developing and creating competencies and capabilities that are performance-based and really important for organizations. Mm-hmm. So organizations have been bringing mindfulness in as kind of a stress relief employee benefit. And one of the initiatives that we think is central, to our mission, is to raise awareness in the corporate ranks, if you will, that mindfulness actually does a lot more than that. Okay, that it really is a process that strengthens awareness, attention control, emotional regulation, and that those attributes can be applied inside an organization to develop stronger business competencies, to develop more effective leaders, to develop a workforce that is more motivated, more engaged, more interested and curious about what they're doing. And it offers emotional intelligence benefits as well, so that people are able to collaborate more fully. It supports inclusion. These are kind of sweeping statements. But if we come back to the science, we see that, this is a very, very legitimate logic path, right? So that means that mindfulness is a really big deal. For the last forever, companies have been trying to help their employees, their leaders and employees, feel great about themselves, or, to feel fulfilled in their job, or to be engaged in the company itself. And they've always wanted to help their people with their cognitive capabilities and their emotional capabilities. But many of the tools that have been available for personal development have been kind of locked up in the, spiritual, religious, family dinner table, social, neighborhood, batch of learning. And so companies have always assumed that that's where we learn these kinds of skills. And they want to hire those skills, but in order to strengthen them or train them, corporations have never had the capability to actually sort of use those techniques or teach those kind of mental and emotional skills. They've been, really hands-off, as they should be, right? Companies and public education, should not be teaching any particular belief system, right? Whether it's New Age or Buddhism or Catholicism or any belief system. But for the past 40 years, science, neuroscience, psychology, biology, have all taken a deep dive into the question of, can the mind actually change the brain? Can it change the structure and function of the brain and the body? And the consensus very strongly now is across the science community and across all these different disciplines is yes, it certainly can. So there is great evidence that the way we think, how we structure our thoughts, how we respond to the thoughts and emotions that appear in the brain and then ultimately in consciousness, can actually create real change in the brain and actually real change in the body. And this is a realization that creates a massive inflection point in how we're able to now teach our people, how we're now able to not just train business skills, not just train technical skills, not just train sales or leadership skills, but actually help train mental and emotional skills. And these are mental and emotional skills that help our people become better humans. Okay, these are mental and emotional skills that help them become better fathers and brothers and mothers and children and friends and coworkers. These are outcomes that help each individual be able to really have a different relationship with their stress and their anxiety and their worries and all of these mental models that sort of exist in our non-conscious. This is incredibly valuable for the individual person. And the theory of human capital is that that person will then bring that capital, and they have the right to choose where they contribute that human capital. But, you know, the theory is that they will bring that to work the next day and that they will contribute that renewed sense of engagement, motivation, the renewed sense of happiness, the renewed sense of you know, sort of satisfaction with their life. And, you know, for every individual that doesn't kick the cat on the way to work every morning, right, or doesn't get into a fight with their spouse or their kids, or doesn't, you know, that person is coming into the organization and taking just one more little piece of toxicity out of the environment. So this is an incredibly positive investment, if you will, that companies can make that we've never been able to make before. You know, we've never been able to present, and still to a great degree, aren't able to present these kinds of teachings without the worldview and the belief system that we have to ask people to buy into in order to, you know, in order to realize the value. What science has done is, one, it's literally opened the door to our being able to discuss these capabilities as proven science. It's also done enough research now. I mean, literally there's 6,000 to 8,000 studies that have been done in the past two decades on meditation and mindfulness and its impact on health, its impact on cognitive performance, its impact on emotional intelligence. And now for the last decade, there's another big group of research reports that have been done on how it fits into the organization, how it fits into organizational development, leadership development, etc. And so we now have a body of information that allows us to build an entire curriculum around mindfulness through an all science, not just science based, but an all science lens, so that we can look at the science of mindfulness. And you know, this is an incredible step forward, and we just simply don't know it yet. You know, 98% sort of corporate leaders out there in the world, again, have a positive view overall. They have a sense that there's something good about mindfulness. They probably have the knowledge that it's good for stress relief, and so it would be really good to give their people an employee benefit that helps them learn mindfulness. But they don't yet understand or know, and this is our mission at IOM, is to help them gain the awareness that mindfulness really is a way to transform the organization one individual at a time. And that's really the only transformational lever that we have. We've all made believe that our people are going to become, happier and more engaged if we give them more employee benefits, or if we put a pool table right in the employee lounge, or put a restaurant
the Amazon
in
mindfulness
the campus,
room,
right?
Or a warehouse floor.
Yeah, right. A meditation room or a nap room. And, you know, these things are simply not going to move the needle. And, you know, we can see that over two decades of experimenting with them. The only thing that's going to move the needle is when each individual in an organization is bringing a better version of that individual into the organization. Mm-hmm. And the ability now to give them those tools to help their own, you know, their own lives, their own families, and then naturally bring that back into the organization is a really new and really, really exciting prospect. So that's what IOM is about. IOM is about being able to tell that story, be able to raise awareness, you know, at the corporate level, but also build the structures across that chasm from where we are today that allow that to become a reality. So, you know, in order to really bring mindfulness into an organization and have it literally proliferate across thousands and thousands of desktops, there must be a set of standards and practices that everyone that teaches mindfulness inside an organization adheres to, right? And the simplest one is, hey, we only teach science when we go to an organization. We can teach whatever we want to teach in our own studio or in our own classes, but when we go inside an organization, there has to be a set of rules around, you know, where you draw that bright line between belief system and science. You know, another structure is that that there should be a curriculum, again, that has some certification levels in it, so that mindfulness teachers and others, coaches who are teaching mindfulness, you know, have an ability to certify their mm-hmm. knowledge and to certify what they are teaching. And then a third structure, and this is not the only, you know, set of structures, but a third structure is some reliable way to measure the outcomes so that we do understand what is happening on the other side of the training, right? What are the outcomes? And then how do you connect those outcomes to actual business results, to actual financial results? So IOM, the Institute for Organizational Mindfulness, has as a mission, first, this raising of awareness. You know, second, the building of these structures that allow mindfulness to actually come in and hopefully transform organizations. And then the third big component of our mission is that we need to help all of the teachers and all of the coaches and all of the service providers that are bringing, you know, this knowledge into the organization and make sure that they are upskilled so that they're not only expert, if you will, in teaching mindfulness practices and mindfulness concepts, but they're expert in teaching those in a 100% science framework, right? So understanding the science is critical, and also upskilling them to understand how to apply that science to applications, you know, inside the company. So in other words, how to apply mindfulness to create personal performance mm-hmm. and how to convert that personal performance into organizational mm-hmm. performance. And so these are teachers and coaches that not only know how to teach mindfulness, but they know how to integrate that mindfulness into a workplace. They know how to turn that into programs that have specific outcomes of their own in creating more effective leaders, in creating more effective client-facing sales and customer service people, in creating more effective software engineers who might be building the product, et cetera. So this is a long-term enterprise, but this is the point in the marketplace, if you will, where we can actually take these new paradigms and bring them in and begin to act mm-hmm. on them.
And so this is such a big vision, and you think the time is now. You think we're at an inflection point right now with all of this.
Yeah, I think there's two reasons we're at this inflection point. One is that again, there's been sufficient science that we can literally, you know, very confidently apply that to building all science curriculum. This is a science class mm-hmm. now. It's still being taught as a belief system, but it can, that literally everything that matters, you know, everything that is not, you know, theological doctrine and dogma and or a spiritual belief or, you know, all of the, you know, the body of information that relates, you know, to personal performance and to organizational performance is science mm-hmm. proven now. So that's a huge inflection point. The other contributor, if you will, to this being the moment mm-hmm. when everything changes, is that we're in a tipping point because of the last 18 months, 2 years of pandemic stress and anxiety and worry and concern. But it's not the pandemic that's creating the inflection point. It's literally 40 years of year over year over year increase in a series of what we think of as 21st century suffering. You know, these are ailments, if you will, or maladies, if you will. Another way to look at them is these are intractable human capital challenges that have grown up and that we have not been able to figure out a solution to. So this idea of information overload didn't exist 30 years ago. Today it's creating massive amounts of chronic stress. Digital distraction, the idea that we're addicted effectively to opening up tabs and to checking our text, and that has a huge impact on our productivity, and it also creates massive amounts of stress. The idea of the rise in anxiety disorder, I guess it's over 20% of Americans today are on some kind of anxiety medication. Another 30% are estimated to actually qualify for that medication, but they're simply not diagnosed. That's 50% of the population is experiencing anxiety, over the baseline. That's a crisis. We have a social and political crisis of conflict that really is bubbled to the top in the last 18 months, but it's been with us again for decades, and it's been it's been scaling year over year. There's more harassment, there's more bullying, there's more, microaggression. These are human capital challenges that are getting worse every year. And so these are what has bubbled over. This is really what's contributed to the tipping point. Sure, the pandemic is a perfect storm. The pandemic, is a global health crisis, an economic crisis, job insecurity, fear for the health and wellness of your parents and your children and your loved ones, and a complete massive disruption in your work, and having to come home and very possibly have one or both spouses being laid off, at least temporarily. I mean, this is a big deal. And then the kids come home from school, and now you're sort of also in the business of homeschooling partially and dealing with them all day long as you're trying to deal with these other massive, disruptions. And now we're entering an entirely new phase of that. Now we're being diagnosed with reentry anxiety. And seriously, 82% of Americans, just in March, I believe this study was done, 82% of Americans say, I'm as stressed or more stressed today than I was last year at the very height of the COVID crisis and of the COVID fears. So, our anxiety around going back to work. Some people don't want to wear a mask. Other people feel like everybody needs to wear a mask. These are societal conflicts that are mirrored in our workplace. And people are anxious about going to that workplace. They may be anxious about being infected. They may be anxious about sending their kids to school or not sending their kids to school. There is a tremendous perfect storm that this pandemic has generated, but really it's putting us over the top of decades of increasing stress, increasing unhappiness, increasing frustration, increasing anger. And in the workplace, 5 years ago, the National Institutes of Health said that the primary source of premature death is actually chronic stress, and that the primary source of chronic stress is at work, whether you're working in an office or you're working from home. It's a direct line you know, from the workplace to chronic stress to all kinds of, you know, ailments, including premature death. So this is a big deal. So those two, you know, sort of the problem is mm-hmm. coming in, and actually all of a sudden companies are having to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Right? Having to deal with the great resignation, right. You know, there's never in history has there ever been a time when so many people have simply quit.
Goodbye. Right?
Right? And at the same time, you know, new numbers have come out on employee engagement. And, you know, the new numbers are that only 15% of people in the organizations remain engaged with their job. Again, that's never been that dire. You know, it's never been an emergency like that. So that on one side is an enormous problem that, you know, organizations have to deal with. And on the other side of the tipping point, or on the other side of the inflection point, is the fact that we have a solution mm-hmm. to it. It's not a perfect solution. It's not an inoculation. You don't wave a wand and it happens all at once. But we have a way to teach people about their brain, about how their brain mm-hmm. works, about how their brain reacts and responds, you know, to all of this confusion and chaos in the atmosphere, in the ether, and gives them really a set of emotional tools and mental tools to be able to change those mechanics.
Amazing.
We've never had that before. So that's a huge factor. And these problems boiling over, they're meeting in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what's producing the inflection point, at
wow.
least.
Wow. Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. It's like such a big vision. And the way to scale this is through the organizational framework as well. Because, you know, if you're going to do this, you can't do this one at a time at a webinar. It's going to have to be. So the organizations need it. The science is in. And the people need it. So, like, what's the problem, right?
It's a no-brainer if you understand, you know, where we are. You know, and again, it's a big challenge because a very small percentage of the population, even the people that are read in and understand what mindfulness is and what it can do, you know, haven't necessarily made this leap to you know, how can I look at this through a lens and communicate it through a lens that the corporation can understand. So, you know, even in our own sort of community of you know, mindfulness, if you will, teachers or experts or thought leaders or whatever, there's a very small number who have actually seen this kind of big picture. And almost nobody in the organization mm-hmm. understands it yet. Again, because this is not the way that we look at mindfulness today. This is not the way that the media, you know, has ever portrayed mindfulness, because they haven't been read in either. Right. And it's not the way that our, you know, our base of mindfulness teachers and thinkers and gurus, it's not the way they perceive, you know, reality mm-hmm. today, you know, and because for 40 years, they've been learning mindfulness through a specific framework. And so for them, that, you know, that works. And it does work. It's great for them, you know, but it's not going to change or transform the organization. Mm-hmm. Right. Until the organization understands what it is they want. In this new world, the organization is mm-hmm. the client. So typically, if I'm a mindfulness teacher, my client is a person. And so my value proposition to that person is that, you know, this is a set of mental and emotional skills that will help you, you know, deal with, cope with stress and anxiety and confusion. It'll help you develop the traits, the emotional traits that can make you more human and more kind and more courteous. And you will be a happier, more fulfilled individual. And that is the promise that we offer when we look at an mm-hmm. organization that we're promising to every individual. But our client is the organization. Right. So we have to be able to communicate with the organization in a way that they can clearly see the scientific outcomes of this kind of training, that they can see that there is no, you know, sort of political pushback, social pushback, you know, religious pushback, that it really, you know, fits the criteria of being, you know, all science. And that if they make this investment, it's going to work for the individual. Now, it's not going to work for all of those individuals. It's going to work great for a small population of individuals who see the value, who model, you know, the 7 out of 10 CEOs of the largest companies in the world that meditate every day, and who see this as a true, you know, personal development and powerful personal development tool. And they're not going to reach, you know, the 10% or 15%, it's a Pareto curve, right? They're not going to reach the 10% on the other side. But everyone in the middle will get something out of learning about how their brain works and learning how they can, you know, how they can remove the panic and the fear and the anxiety and the worry that is so uncomfortable and so unpleasant and makes them so unhappy. You know, they're all motivated to be happier. We all are. That's our, you know, that's what we want, right? So the organizational value proposition is that if you can provide this kind of training literally to everyone, okay, that a large percentage of the people in your organization are likely to be coming to work, right, and behaving in a different way. Some in a slightly different way, some in a very different way, but every single action that's different from a negative action that might have happened before this training is, again, a piece of toxicity that comes out of the system. So if one manager who just doesn't believe in this stuff at all, you know, it's like, I don't want anything to do with it, sits in a class, learns about, you know, the fact that the brain's essentially 2 million years old, and without our knowing it, it's creating, you know, stress and creating problems for us. So, and never does a meditation, you know, never, right? But away from that training takes just that one concept that, you know what, I don't have to get mad because my brain is getting mad. Right? I actually have control over that space between the stimuli that unconsciously my brain has always gotten angry about. You know, I have the ability to detach just enough to not get mad, right? So let's say that manager goes into his meeting tomorrow morning with his 9 people on his team, and somebody says something or looks in some way or something happens that would normally send them into a tirade.
I have been in that meeting.
But they don't. Let's say they don't one time, you know? That saves 9 people from having a crappy day. That is the difference between any of those other 9 people creating, you know, real hardship and real, you know, unhappiness. And it's the difference between those 9 people being able to go from that meeting and concentrate on something fully, or those 9 people being upset and leaving that meeting with a, you know, with the confusion of being upset. This is not insignificant, right? And if that happens with not just one manager, but 10 managers today, you're beginning to create a completely different, less toxic, non-toxic environment in your company, right? And putting a pool table in the faculty lounge or in the, you know, in the break room does not accomplish that, right? And telling everybody that they need to be happy does not accomplish that. What accomplished that is one individual, you know, who is able now to control their emotions to the extent that they don't go nuclear in a, you know, in a conference room where they didn't even think about it before. You know, it's just, so it's big.
It's huge. It's massive. So what then is the vision for the podcast in relationship?
Well, we have a whole series of activities underway, if you will, at IOM that are aimed at this kind of, you know, raising consciousness that there is something different in town, that we can look at this set of tools in an entirely new way, that, you know, the teachers can actually take advanced, learn advanced techniques that can help them not just teach mindfulness, but teach mindfulness effectively inside organizations. We have a series of blog or a series of webcasts, for example, where we are on a monthly basis, we're interviewing the experts now who were early adopters, who started these initial programs inside these great companies. So we've interviewed, you know, the people that started the program at Microsoft and Intel and Google and SAP and, you know, on and on, Morgan Stanley and et cetera. And the notion there is so that our members can have access to people that have actually done it. You know, they've kind of been able to upsell the idea that this is an important process. They've been able to actually build an internal course of some kind, and they're actually leading, you know, meditations and doing other activities that support, you know, a mindful workforce or a mindful workplace. Where we saw the opportunity here for a podcast is that we have many people. In fact, our members represent people that really don't know anything about mindfulness. They've heard of it. They know a little bit about it, but they're not in the inner circle, in the bubble of people that are already kind of, you know, they're the choir, yeah. Right? When
they're
you're
well
singing to the choir,
people, yeah.
Like there's a lot, right? Yeah. There's a lot of people that, oh, I get it. I want it. You know, I'm great with, you know, the Buddhist teachings. I'm great with, that's what I want. And that's a huge population of people, don't get me wrong. But there's a much more vast population of people out there that never rises into their consciousness. Mm-hmm. What's in their consciousness is simply that they're underwater and they're confused and they're unhappy, right? And so we want to bring, these are people that have malaria that have no idea that you can get a shot that can cure malaria, okay? So what we're trying to do is reach out to organizations and have them essentially give that kind of an inoculation, if you will, mental inoculation to their workforce. So there are a number of really wonderful thought leaders and gurus, if you will, people who have been essentially massively influential, you know, in the media and sort of have, you know, are part of the history of modern mindfulness. You know, people like Sharon Salzberg, who literally was an inflection point of her own, right? When she came back from Burma and began to teach mindfulness in a very sort of a Western dialect, if you will. People like Ron Siegel, who is a Harvard professor, who, you know, is, again, one of the early experts in the science of mindfulness and bringing it, you know, sort of into the mainstream. Rhonda McGee, who was the chairman, I believe she may be still the chairman at Search Inside Yourself, which is a wonderful organization that came out of Google, who is, you know, extremely articulate on the issues of mindfulness and inclusion and
that,
diversity.
It's the inner work of racial justice, I think, is her her book. It's amazing. Yeah,
her new book. Yeah, I mean, you know, these are really, really great people who have very strong perspectives on the value of mindfulness. So the vision behind this podcast is, let's bring these people in, right, and interview them about how they feel about this idea of organizational mindfulness, to get their experience in organizations, because all of these people have great early adopter kind of experience in working with the really early progressive companies around mindfulness. So these are, you know, these are true thought leaders. And again, we have the monthly webcast around, you know, that introduces the people that have actually built mindfulness programs inside companies. And the podcast is a much more conversational, if you will, interview with the thought leaders, you know, behind mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, and here we are doing an interview with a thought leader behind it. And I just am really so happy to talk to you about this and hear your framing of this gigantic issue and how visionary it is and how powerful it is to hear you speak about it. And I just want to say thanks, you know, on behalf of the Mindful community and for launching the podcast. And it's just going to be great. We've already got episodes queued up and ready to roll. And it's going to be a ton of fun. All the people that you mentioned, we have episodes with. So we hope our listeners will look for that. And so, Michael, where can people find out about the Institute for Organizational Mindfulness?
Well, our website is www.iomindfulness.org. You can look us up on LinkedIn. We have a pretty robust presence there with a news feed and a LinkedIn group. We'd love to have you join our LinkedIn discussion group. And we're, you know, we're posting a lot of content out on LinkedIn. We'd love to have anyone in the audience consider becoming a community member. Community membership is free, and it unlocks a lot of the sorts of resources that we have. So you can attend webcasts, you can access a pretty good slice of our own original research. It opens up access to a whole library of resources. When you Google mindfulness, there's, I don't know, something like 300 million yeah. results. Okay, so good luck, you know, getting out there and figuring out mindfulness. So what we've done as a public service is, and we're continuing to do this, is we've curated that mass of information, you know, and really tried to pull out the most real, logical, reasonable, credible resources that support mindfulness through this scientific mm-hmm. lens, and that actually look at mindfulness in a way that would be helpful for personal development, helpful beyond just stress relief, helpful in developing your capability to focus, your capability to really control and manage mm-hmm. your emotions, your capability to, you know, work and deal with other people, you know, in a much more effective manner. Right. So these are performance aspects mm-hmm. or performance outcomes that are critical in business, and they're critical in companies, and they're critical to your career. Mm. OK, so you can actually access this information in a way that connects those dots we've curated to, you know, to point you in that direction.
Amazing. Yeah. And I would encourage listeners to go look at the Institute for Organizational Mindfulness website, iomindfulness.org. And there is a ton of stuff out there, and it's really, really useful, high quality, like you say. So thank you. And this has been a ton of fun, Michael, and I really appreciate you taking the time to introduce listeners to the podcast and to IOM and to your big vision and the power of it. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Brett. Really appreciate it.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of the Organizational Mindfulness Podcast. And if you did, leave us a review on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you enjoy your podcasts. While you're there, be sure to click subscribe, because you're not going to want to miss our next interview with another amazing guest. I'm your host, Brett Hill, for the Institute for Organizational Mindfulness. Till next time, stay present.